people have said already really sums up what's at stake at the moment, isn't it? Because what's happening through austerity at the minute is they're now unpicking everything that have made people's life worthwhile. Right, stuff around it, and it goes from whether you work in a fast food restaurant on the one hand in this country to the fact that countries like Greece are really being crucified, right, stuff by the process that's unravelled after the economic crisis broke out in 2008, really. And I think that what's starting to happen is all the certainties in people's lives are beginning to break down, and it's reflected politically, isn't it, right, stuff. When you talk about in Greece, where you had a Labour type party, PASOK and stuff, becoming a tiny element, and Syriza exploding out of nowhere, right, stuff around it. In Spain, you've got organisations like Podemos and other organisations, other political groupings beginning to appear on the scenes, right, stuff, because it seems that mainstream political parties, both of the traditional right and the traditional left, don't seem to have an answer for people and stuff. There's a famous phrase, isn't there, about the centre cannot hold, and that seems to be what's going on, really. And actually, it's for a lot of times, we were always told that Britain was different, right, and stuff, even though you had bad times, it was a stable country and nothing could change and the rest of it. And actually a sort of sniff of what's happened in Greece is beginning to happen here, isn't it, right, and stuff, and it's unfolded over the last few months. First thing was Scotland, to be honest with you, right, stuff around it, well, the referendum, right, and stuff over independence, right, and stuff, and then the general election. For years the Labour Party in Scotland was the party of government, right, and stuff. You weighed the votes for Labour, right, and stuff, and Labour disintegrated and disappeared in Scotland and stuff over that, and the SNP eclipsed it completely. And when you think about, our last couple of months, they have been bizarre, because really, we should all be sitting around slashing our wrists, shouldn't we? Because we've got a Tory government, right, and stuff, they've just been re-elected, and they're a bunch of bastards, right, and stuff. But most of us actually do have a little bit of a spring in our step, don't we, right, about it. And it's because the political setup in Britain has shifted, and it's centred, really, we know, on the election of Jeremy Corbyn, right, and stuff. Because in lots of ways, the election of Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour leader has summed up a feeling amongst, hundreds of thousands of people, particularly activists in the movement, right, that is just cannot go on, right, and stuff about it. And that's why he got the vote in the way he did. And when you think about the setup inside the Labour Party, I'm sorry, it was completely impossible for Jeremy Corbyn to be elected, really, right, and stuff about it. The whole system was beautifully organised, right, to stop this happening, right, and stuff. And they'd done it to John McDonnell the time before, right, they couldn't even get on a ballot paper. And why did they do it? I mean, I asked myself this question quite a lot, why did they do it? And I suppose in some ways it just shows the most supreme level of arrogance from some of them. Like, what they thought would happen is Corbyn would get on a ballot paper and there'd be little lineups like this, right, and stuff, and he'd come out with all this extremist rubbish and everybody would laugh, and then they'd elect Andy Burnham or someone, right, and stuff about it. The trouble of it was, when you went out and started talking about all this extremist rubbish, people liked it, didn't they, right? And they liked it in thousands and thousands of people. And it's not surprising, because to turn the TV on and to have a politician who tries to answer a question is very refreshing. But if I was at a Barnet the other morning and stuff, there was a strike in Barnet, right, stuff against privatisation. There's a man, John Burgess, who leads the Unison branch there, who's standing for General Secretary of Unison, by the way, and everybody should be in behind John, because he's a good fighter, and we need a fighter who's running Unison, right? And there you are in the murk and the fog, right, standing outside, and John McDonnell turns up, right, to the picket line. Now, I'm used to John McDonnell turning up, because he's someone you know in London, and you chat to and the rest of it, right? But then you do look round, you double take, because he is a Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, and probably the last time this happened was like 100 years ago, right, about it, and so there is a kind of electric feeling, I think, that it just shows up to a lot of people that something is possible here. And when you get a Labour leader elected who walks out of the place where he's just been elected and walks onto a demonstration to support refugees, or tonight when he's speaking with people like Wayman Bennett and other people in London to support Calais and the rest of the stuff about it shows that something has shifted. And this is a really important thing for us to try to get to grips with, right, because it shows, right, stuff, that there's a real opening for socialist ideas and for change at the minute. And it's not just obviously about John and Jeremy, because people have mobilising as well. I mean, one of the most exciting things about the fallout from the general election, I think, was four young women in Bristol. Because when the election happened, a lot of us all sat there going, oh, fucking hell, another 5 years, blah, blah, blah. It's going to take us 6 months or a year to start getting stuff going. What did they do? They went on Facebook and they said, anybody who's fed up, turn up in the centre of Bristol tomorrow night, and 4,000 people turned up. And since then, funny things like this have been happening. 250,000 people turned up to demonstrate against austerity in June in London, right? So, and actually, the TUC demonstration in Manchester was astounding. I mean, to tell you a secret, I don't think the TUC thought it was going to be that big. They don't ever think anything's going to be that big, actually, the TUC, right? Because, you know, when it came to the end of the demonstration, they hadn't even organised a rally, the TUC, but they got 80 or 100,000 people turning up to the thing. And the mood on these demonstrations is not one where we're all like, you know, oh God, terrible cuts, whatever. People have got their tails up. People are angry, and they're starting to think about what they can do about the situation. And like I said, the thing that sums it up most of all, and it's not to say that everybody in Britain now is, every single person is a convinced anti-racist, etc, etc, but you think about the issue of refugees, right? UKIP got 4 million votes, right, and stuff about it. You think about the way the entire debate around refugees and immigration and the rest of it was so poisonous during the general election, right, and stuff about it. And actually, look what's happened over the last couple of months. You know, 50,000 people marched in London. They reckon the figure is now, they reckon that 31% in a poll they've done of people in Britain have done something to raise money for refugees in Calais and elsewhere. That's pretty impressive, right, and stuff, when you think how absolutely poisoned the debate was, right, and stuff. And when you do get, you know, people at the top of the Labour movement coming out and saying it's wrong to attack these people, come on, and the rest of it, you can see out of the possibilities of things changing. We were just talking about this early on. I think there's a couple of things that really did it. One is the picture of that little boy washed up on the beach. And when you talk about the numbers of people who died, it's like sometimes it's unmanageable, because 5,000 people died in the Adriatic. You think, what does that mean? And then you see some little kid who looked like my little kid did when he was 2 years old, right, washed up wearing a red jumper on a beach, right? Suddenly it becomes a real thing for people. And we know as the winter comes on, right, so these camps, they look exactly like pictures of the Second World War. That's what they look like. People coming out of Turkey, people and the rest of it and stuff, and people in Calais, everybody who's been to Calais, I mean, you know, no offense, Calais a dump at the best of times, right, so about it. But the idea, you have to spend your time in a camp outside there and stuff, in tents and the rest of it, right? So, you know, and that's why you can see the beginnings of a shift, and partly because it's a wider offensive, isn't it? You go through some of the facts and figures about what they're doing at the minute. It is, you know, there are a million people in Britain living on food banks. Right, so we're dependent on food banks. This is like the fourth or the fifth richest country in the world. Where I live in northwest London and stuff, there's been a whole nother series of housing occupations because they're throwing our people, working class people, out of their houses, right, and stuff, in order to sell them off and build privatised houses later on. The thing about tax credits really summed it up. I mean, anybody who saw that woman on Question Time, I think she ran a nail bar, didn't she, right, and stuff, which she'd obviously always seen herself as a bit of a, you know, cut above. That's why she'd voted Tory and the rest of it, right? And when you get the reality that you're working your arse off one way or the other, the only way you get through is for these tax credits in the first place, and they're going to take them away from you, and you start going through the amount of money you're going to, no wonder she's crying, right, about, because this is brutal, right, and stuff, what they're pushing through and stuff. And that's why the whole thing about the scapegoating process, division, you know, prevent the extremism bill that's coming out, all the rest of it and stuff, has been so important to them, because they're trying to get something to deflect our minds from what is really going on, right, stuff about, and that's why the stuff around refugees has been so important. There's another thing that's really crucial over the next couple of weeks and stuff, which is what's happening with the trade union bill. Because when you think about it, I mean, the people don't need me to go through the whole list of it, but the trade union bill is vicious. It's absolutely vicious, right, and stuff. I mean, they've made some concessions over the last couple of days, like, you know, you're not going to have to give details of your tweets or your Facebook page 2 weeks in advance and the rest of it and stuff. They've made some concessions over it, right? But fundamentally, what they're doing with that bill is they're going to make national strike action all but impossible, right, and stuff. And they're still talking about a process which effectively will criminalise people on the picket line, no matter what they believe they've made in retreats and the rest of it. And why are they so obsessed about this? Because actually, we all know the level of strikes in Britain is quite low, right, and stuff about it. And actually, the trade unions are not at the stage they were in the early 70s and the rest of it. Why are they so obsessed about it? Well, one is they are absolutely terrified that the general mood, right, stuff that exists against them is going to spread into the workplaces. And you can see signs of this already and stuff. Actually, funny enough, you can see with the junior doctors That's the biggest thing. They just offered them 11%. And actually, talking about using various swear words, I believe the junior doctors are going to tell them to fuck off, right, about it. Because actually, they know that it is much bigger than just the issue of unsocial hours. They know the whole National Health Service is being destroyed. This ain't phrases or rhetoric anymore. It is being destroyed, right, stuff about it. And that's why I think the government is so obsessed with the idea of trying to deal with the trade unions, right? And also, because sometimes our side hasn't got a very good memory of what we've done and the rest of it, they do remember things. They remember a few years ago when we had 2.5 million people on strike over pensions and a million or so again over pay. And the thing that beat us over this issue is, right, wasn't them, wasn't the trade union laws or anything else, it was our own bloody side. It was our own side giving in and arguing you had to wait for Ed Miliband. You imagine doing that now? Let's wait for Ed Miliband, that'll save us, right, stuff about it. But I also remember further back, 30 years now since the miners' strike, right, we know the miners lost, but we also know the miners got 3 times close to smashing the Tory government, and they remember that, and they also remember the fact that their governments have been brought down in the past by the power of the trade unions, right, stuff over it. And so sometimes our side has various sociological arguments why the working class is finished and why we can't fight back and the rest of it. The Tories are good old-fashioned class warriors, and they know who the real enemy is, and that's why they're trying to pump that. That's why they're trying to pump through legislation stuff about it. It's also the fact that, because they want to victimise people who are fighters, like the people on this table. And actually, it's quite interesting. There's a bloke called Sandy Nicholl. I don't know if people read about this last couple of days. Sandy Nicholl is a Unison rep at SOAS University. Right, and stuff, and they're trying to dismiss Sandy for the evil process of walking through a gate. Right, stuff, which obviously is a sackable offence, isn't it, in most places, and walking through a gate, right, because some students walked in behind him, right? Why are they really trying to sack Sandy? Because he's at a university where he organises a brilliant trade union branch, where he's organised migrant workers to go to get the London Living Wage, and where they're about to make millions of pounds worth of cuts and cut down courses, and the students are in occupation. So what have they decided? They decided to cut his head off, right, and stuff. It's funny, we had a little sign which is reinstate Sandy, and there's a little secret with that sign, because it used to say reinstate Candy, right, stuff. And she was a rep at the National Gallery, right, stuff, who after 111 days got her job back over the thing. And a mate of mine is the rep at Lambeth College, and her name is Mandy, and she just got a letter. She just got a letter literally, right, 2 days ago, right, which is the first process of trying to get rid of her, because she led an all-out strike, right, and stuff, last year for 6 weeks against job losses. And that's what the trade union bill's about, right, it's the favourite. It's not just about victimising people and the rest of it. It is about the Tories having long memories, right, and they know they're trying to smash our side up, and they know the most powerful element on our side, of course street protests are vital, what the students do is vital, but you unite that with what the comrades are talking about in Greece, where you take a street movement and you start to unite that with the organised working class, and you get a very, very powerful movement as well. One of the big questions, though, that's coming up, and actually it's an essential question in relation to the whole question about how you organise, right, and stuff, is about where the problem really is there. Because actually, you know, it's a basic thing. We're arguing with people tonight in this meeting to join the Socialist Workers Party. Now, in some ways, that's a funny thing to do, because about 100,000, 130,000 people, or whatever, 140,000 people just joined the Labour Party. And the Labour Party is now run by Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell, and these are brilliant people. So why aren't we all running into the Labour Party and stuff? And so I wanted, this is the bit I want to bring up, not because I want to claim we're the great elite and everybody else has got it wrong, but I want to try and put a discussion about what goes to the heart of the thing is, because it isn't just about the Tories being a bunch of bastards. We all know it. We all know all the jokes about David Cameron and farmyard animals, and we know what these people are about, and we know how vicious they are. But really, the fundamental problem we've got here is we're talking about a system, aren't we? We're talking about a system, right, and stuff, which is absolutely fundamentally organised to make sure that the people at the top make profit no matter what happens to the rest of us. And the refugee stuff sums it up, because the way they put it on TV is it's like it's a natural disaster. These terrible things have happened, and therefore people are leaving Syria and whatever and stuff. But you know what's actually happening here, right? Is two things. First of all, that these people are running away from wars. Who's created the wars? Well, not us, but people who run our country, the state, yeah. Russia, other people intervene in these countries, slaughter people, and so shockingly, they then try to get their families out, right, stuff over it. Well, what a terrible thing to do if you're in the middle of a war zone, right, stuff over it, right? And so what their answer to this is, right, stuff, is not a simple answer, which is, we've all got a simple answer, isn't it? If you've got 20,000 people stuck in a camp, who are trying to get help and support and the rest of it, what do you do with them? You let them in, don't you? You open the border up, let them in, and make sure they're looked after. That's what human beings do. But the system isn't about human beings, right, stuff over it. It's about the idea of defending your profit, your nation state, closing borders when you need to, opening the borders when you need to, and the rest of it. It's about a system, and it's about an absolutely inhumane system which is based completely on profit. I mean, Ian's talking about the steel industry. Still, one point, they'll be more profitable. Other points, the profits dip, right, and stuff, because of international trade, blah, 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 different things about it. So what do? Do you have a rational argument, which is people in this country will need steel, or do you say, well, actually, there's a bottom line, once it falls under that, shut the bloody thing. And that's what the argument here is. So it's absolutely, just a simple common sense, it's ridiculous what's going on, right, stuff bad. But we have to remember and stuff over, both over profitability and over mashing up our side. You know, they did that to the pits. They've done it time and time again, right, stuff about it. The decisions they make are all about hanging on to power, hanging on to profit and the rest of it. I mean, and people know the examples, but there are incredible examples over the last few years about the idea of putting a profit before humanity, which aren't just about, you know, our simple examples. Two things really stuck out to me was reading that stuff today. One is that they had a situation where a hedge fund bought the contract to one of the HIV AIDS drugs, right, stuff about it. And at the time, a pill cost $13.50, to produce, and at the end of that process, it costs $750, right, stuff. So the hedge fund, right, stuff, is doing very well. I mean, if you're going to your shareholders or the people who are around, right, stuff, you can have a lovely board meeting at the end of the year and explain how well you're doing for the people who are working for you. The problem is, how many people are dead out of that equation? And literally, people sit in rooms in nice suits, right, stuff, and make these decisions about what we're doing. I mean, climate change must be one of the biggest things. There are going to be big mobilisations in December over the issue of climate change and the rest of it. You know, we all know that at some point there may well be a fact, the tipping point here, 2 degrees up, the Earth may well be, you know, we won't be in the position we're in now. Stuff we moan about the weather in Sheffield, right, and stuff. We won't be. We will moan about it a sight more if that happens. We're talking about a situation where we get the polar ice caps beginning to melt. Right, stuff. The Antarctic begins to melt, and what do oil companies think? The oil companies think this is a good opportunity to go and drill. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. It's literally physically destroying the planet you live on, right, stuff. But as long as you can get the margin, right, stuff, you're okay with it. And that's why it goes back to all the things about attacks on people's wages and conditions and everything. All this is about a system where the people at the top of it think only about profit and profit only. And that's where it comes back to the question of labour and what and Jeremy Corbyn and what's happened over the last couple of months, because there is one fundamental point, which is no matter how brilliant Jeremy or John McDonnell can be, there's 4 years to the next election. Right, stuff about it. And in the end, all of us know, thinking you're in a room at the schools you work in, at the colleges you go to, and the jobs you do, what are things going to be like in 4 years' time if we don't fight? There is going to be very, very little left for us in that situation. But the second thing about it is what happens to a Corbyn government if it was elected? And we all want to see that, by the way. I would have thought everybody in the room would like to see a situation where Jeremy Corbyn was a prime minister and where John McDonnell was a Chancellor of the Exchequer. But in that situation, the same pressures that the Comrade talked about in Greece that were thrown onto Syriza are going to exist. And when you talk about the Syriza government, when they were elected, and the people around it, they didn't get elected in order to pass on the attacks. They thought they were being elected to act as a shield for people in Greek society. They were elected to try to oppose austerity and the rest of it. And when people voted, 61% of people voted no, right, and stuff, over the bailout and the rest of it and stuff, they voted to try and oppose it. Actually, the pressure of the banks, the pressure of the multinationals, the pressure on those people has forced them to buckle. So I'll try and do the rest of it and stuff in 2 minutes, which will be quite a tall order, right, and stuff. But one thing is, you can be a bit paranoid about these things, right, but it's not us, there really is, it was a month ago now, isn't it, a general who it was the Independent newspaper and did a briefing about what would happen to the army's position would be about a Corbyn government, right, stuff over it. And they said, quite simply, if they talk about pulling out of NATO and they talk about ending Trident, we're not going to have it. Well, and that's not some like weird extremist revolutionaries talking about this. This is the British Army talking about what they would do in that situation. And we know in the past, right, and stuff, that actually Labour governments have been destabilised. Money's flown out of the country, right, and stuff around it. There's been all kinds of attempts to do that. Happened in the 70s and the rest of it. But Jeremy Corbyn's, his hero, because he says it, is a man called Salvador Allende. Right, stuff. And Allende led a government in Chile that tried to do exactly what we're talking about here. They tried to make social change. They tried to defend workers' rights and the rest of it. And they ended up dying trying to defend the presidential palace under bombs that were being dropped by a man called General Pinochet, who he'd seen as an absolute prop to defend his government and stuff. It's not about the individuals selling out or et cetera, et cetera. What it's about is the huge pressures and the ability of the other side to fight to hang on to everything that's there. So I'll try and finish this in 1 minute then, right, and stuff about it. John McDonald's talked about Marx being back and back in fashion, right, stuff like that. It's the important thing to say, right, stuff about it. But Marx isn't just about economic analysis, right, stuff to the system. He also talked about the creation of a gravedigger. He also talked about the way that the working class is pulled together, right, stuff in the workplaces, and people can have all kinds of ideas. They can be racist, they can be sexist, they can be homophobic. We don't talk about working class people because they're so perfect. When you're pulled together in work, look, that collective experience bucks against the divisions, and it also gives you power. In London, they were laughing the other day, right, because the DLR was going to go out and strike. Right, so the Docklands Light Railway, oh, it doesn't matter, we'll go through that. Services usual. They have this sort of photograph from Canary Wharf. Right, stuff, but it's like something out of the end of the world. There's like about 30,000 people trying to get in this one tube station. But this is a small group of workers. There aren't millions of them. They're driving us trains. It's not like there's millions of people there and stuff over it, right? But half of London stopped to do it, right, and stuff. And actually, that's one lot of, when you talk about Greece, where people are going to take action on that level, working class people still have an enormous power. And just to finish, really, that's where the evil word revolution has to get talked about. Writing stuff over it, because it's not like, you know, what is a revolution? It's not about this one glorious moment where people march out carrying AK-47s and turn the world over, or where a minority of people go off and do something for you. It's a process. And when you talk about what's going on in Greece, isn't it? It's people are going through a process where they're going through different political organisations, different governments, different expressions, but within it, where workers and students are beginning to develop different forms of democracy. Right stuff, different ways of running things, and we see it in small ways ourselves. Right stuff about it, right stuff. But that idea that there has to be something better than simply right stuff, the Tweedledum and Tweedledee politics that we've had, but also there has to be a power, right stuff, that exists outside of the parliament, even with the best parliamentarians. Because the truth is, even if we get 600 Jeremy Corbyns in power, right stuff, without a movement on the outside, without a mass movement on the outside, they'll be under pressure. We see it over whether he wears a tie or not, or whether he sings the national anthem and the rest of it. What happens if they say they're going to nationalise the railways? What happens if they say they're going to nationalise steel? Right stuff at the minute, right stuff over. That's when the politicians and the press and the generals, by the way, start thinking about whether they're going to allow this to happen and stuff over it. So I think on that basis, organisation outside the Labour Party that defends Corbyn and defends McDonnell, but is concentrated on struggle, is concentrated on bringing together, in the end, the real power that can push, that can take on the system, which is organised workers, students, ordinary people on the streets, in the workplace, in the communities, is important. So therefore, we're 100% behind what's happening, so that John McDonnell and what Jeremy Corbyn are arguing for. But to be honest with you, well, if this movement's going to go further, if it's going to take on austerity, in the end, if it's going to beat capitalism, you need a revolutionary organisation. And under that basis, we argue with people really hard. It's really good, we want to be alongside everybody who's pushing in Labour and stuff at the minute. But in the end, if you want to get rid of capitalism, you need a party like the SWP. You need a revolutionary organisation, a base where the real power is, right? We make the wealth, we make them wealthy and stuff. We can pull the plug on these people and stuff, and we can create a better world.